TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Iraq, Alternatives to Occupation. While the attention of the world is focused on the daily attacks on U.S. soldiers, the radical restructuring of the Iraqi economy gets little notice. Privatization, destruction of the local economy by imports and free trade zones, changes in tax and banking laws decreed with a stroke of a pen by executive order, have made Iraq a free-for-all for U.S. and British corporations. Things are so bad that at the end of 2003, two bills are making their way through House and Senate to deal with dishonest contracting and war profiteering. Rania Masri is a Lebanese-American writer, scholar, and activist. She's the director of the Southern Peace Research and Education Center at the Institute for Southern Studies in Durham, North Carolina. In August, the Institute launched a campaign to stop the war profiteering and corporate invasion of Iraq. You are about to hear her report, given in December 2003 in San Francisco. Here is Rania Masri.
To answer the questions, alternatives to occupation, I think it's really incumbent upon us to first identify what the occupation looks like, for us to be able to think about what kind of alternative do we want to this occupation. The main things that they're doing in Iraq are primarily this. Selection of leaders, where we have the U.S. military, the Department of Defense, and the corporations that they've hired, which include the Research Triangle Institute based in North Carolina with the, you know, their objective of building democracy that they define then as selecting leaders and dismantling those who have been elected from power. So we have one clear thing is selection of leaders in Iraq. The other thing that is very clear is changing the political structure in Iraq and coming up with a political structure that is along sectarian and ethnic divisions. Sectarian and ethnic divisions that they, the other, define as to what is indigenous in Iraq. And to have that be the construct of the government. So if we're going to use as an example, when we had the French occupation in Lebanon, when the French were finally kicked out of Lebanon, they left the Lebanese with a constitution that follows sectarian divisions, demanding that our president in Lebanon be Maronite, and so on and so forth, and thereby dismantling the national identity of Lebanese, and therefore that being one of the reasons that resulted in a 17-year civil war in Lebanon. So when we have that kind of same political construct being developed right now in Iraq, for example, that the foreign minister in Iraq will be a Kurd, not that the foreign minister will be the one that most represents the foreign interest of Iraqis, but no, that the foreign minister will be a Kurd, thereby dismantling a national identity of what it means to be an Iraqi. And then we have the thing that very few people are really talking about, and to me, which is the real crux of the occupation, the very raison d'être of the occupation, which is the economic transformation of the country. The economic transformation of the country. And this goes beyond simply the reconstruction contracts. But when we have Paul Bremer state specifically, just weeks into the invasion, quote, Iraq is open for business, end quote. I mean, you know, I don't think we could have come up with those lines and given them the quotes as much as when Paul Bremer specifically tells us Iraq is open for business. So we need to look at what kind of laws are being transformed in Iraq economically to develop a new, what they call a market-based economy. Now, I have to say, I mean, everybody here, we've studied Econ 101 in college, or we've got some kind of understanding of economics, right? And what we were told, living in the, quote, capitalistic, industrial, free market economy that we live in the United States, is that a free market economy is one that encourages competition, a free base of competition, right? Well, what we have actually in the United States is not a free market economy. What we have in the United States is subsidies that are given to different kinds of people, where we prohibit subsidies given to the small farmer, where we prohibit subsidies given to the small shop owner, and we demand public subsidies for large privately owned corporations. And we call that a free market economy. And I think it's really important for us to look at our economy in that perspective, because that is the same economy that is being forced upon the Iraqi population. And we're defining it as a free market economy. So specifically, there have been some laws that are extremely important for us to look into as to what are the kind of laws that Paul Bremer and George Bush and just a few group of people have with the flash of a pen forced upon the Iraqi population. We have one, which is Executive Order 39. Very powerful order. Order 39, which basically states this. A, that the 194 state-controlled companies in Iraq will be privatized, and that Thomas Foley, who happens to be George Bush's college buddy, will be the one to devise the privatization plan within 6 months. One. Two, that foreign companies can go into Iraq and own 100% of Iraqi material, with the exception of oil that has been set aside for other people. That foreign companies can go into Iraq and own 100% of Iraqi material, Iraqi resources, Iraqi products. And that the companies can remove 100% of their profits out of Iraq. This is in clear violation of the Iraqi constitution. It's in clear violation of other Iraqi laws. It's also in violation of, you know, the rules of the occupier that say you cannot create facts on the ground. But for us, it should remind us of what the European colonials did in Africa and what we had as a clear policy of the underdevelopment of Africa. It's very, very clear. Executive Order 39. As if that were not enough, the same day Paul Bremer issues Executive Order 37, where here we have, in just this much time that it took him to write the one-page order, people have struggled in this country for more than 20 years. We've had two presidential candidates. We've had numerous senators. You know, Forbes struggle for decades to get us, the American public, to accept what Paul Bremer forced upon the Iraqis in a flash of a pen. Flat tax. Order 37 states that the new tax law provides a maximum marginal income tax rate of 15% for both corporations and individuals, which makes it, to my knowledge, the lowest flat tax in the world. And as if that tax weren't low enough, it still, because, you know, we are the country of creating loopholes, it still offers loopholes within that tax itself for those associated with reconstruction contracts. So it can still provide an avenue for U.S.-based corporations to not even pay the horrendously 15% tax. So we have, one, corporations can come in and reap Iraqi products and remove them all out of Iraq and pay up to maximum 15% tax. That's just unbelievable when we think about it. Weeks into the invasion and occupation of Iraq, when there was still no improvement of the electricity, which you would think would be the first thing you would do if you're interested in reconstruction, right? Weeks into that, Paul Bremer issues a free tariff zone in Iraq. Yes, you can import anything you want, and there'll be no tariffs, because we're developing a free market economy, and isn't this great, and we all believe in free competition. Oh my, it just so happens now that we have Chinese products that have flooded the Iraqi market and destroyed the Iraqi textile industry. And it just so happens that we have American Tyson chicken farms, which, as a North Carolinian, I am very much in opposition to American Tyson chicken farms because of their horrendous environmental record, their horrendous labor record, and if we're not even going to think about their animal rights record, okay, that now we have American Tyson chicken farms has flooded the market of Iraq with brown-breasted chicken and destroyed the Iraqi poultry industry. Two industries. The Iraqi textile industry, the Iraqi poultry industry, destroyed within months of the occupation. By July, as reported in the San Francisco Chronicle. This is not to even look upon all the other factories that are slated for privatization, for selling, for numerous other forms of destruction by these new economic laws. And they didn't stop there. They developed a trade bank of Iraq, a new trade bank of Iraq headed by J.P. Morgan Chase & Company that just happened to give the largest contribution to George Bush's campaign of any contribution that they've given to any political campaign. And they happen to be given the Trade Bank of Iraq, which was constructed by George Bush and company. And within the new trade laws, it states, an unlimited number of banks may purchase up to 50% of any Iraqi bank. So foreign banks may now go into Iraq. Not only will the whole collective bank industry in Iraq be run by foreign banks, but on top of that, foreign banks can go into Iraq and purchase up to 50% of an Iraqi bank. And therefore, it will be up to foreign banks to determine the way credits will be given, the way loans will be given, who will get them, on what rates. This is enormous power, enormous power. And it doesn't stop there, because then we have an American law firm with ties to the Bush administration that has been hired to set up a whole new legal system in Iraq to advise on new privatization structures, new regulatory agency structures, and a new tax structure. And again, this happens to be a firm that donated almost $50,000 to George Bush's campaign. All these are just mere coincidences, right? Because, you know, we're not conspiracy theorists. And it's extremely interesting to point out that all these economic structural changes are in violation of international law. But then, when it comes to changing one law in Iraq, which is, you know, during the reign of Saddam Hussein, the way that Saddam Hussein prohibited unions was he basically made numerous industries into state-owned industries and therefore prohibited a worker that works or is affiliated or associated with a state-owned industry to strike, kind of similar to the way we have it here in the United States. When it comes to striking, to joining unions, to having worker associations, Paul Bremer decided not to change that law. Paul Bremer decided, and I quote, "The form of industrial and labor relations ultimately will be a matter for the Iraqi people and the future Iraqi government to decide." Well, thank you for leaving us something to decide. So what he has basically done is stripped the Iraqi people of the foundation of their economy and prohibited them the right to unionize and the right to strike and protest against it. And just in case that wasn't clear, they passed another edict that makes numerous demonstrations unlawful. Just in case they manage to strike anyway and get a protest, you cannot protest in a public arena. Well, that's the only place left for you to protest, because otherwise it would be considered trespassing, right? So basically prohibited protest. And again, we have the fastest growing union in Iraq is the Union of the Unemployed. And twice their leadership has been arrested. And right now their leadership remains in detention in Iraq by Paul Bremer and company. So we have, this is the new economic structure for Iraq. So even when, because I believe every military occupation is doomed to failure, and it's just a question of when the military leaves, not if, but when. But what we need to determine, what we need to recognize quite clearly, is when the U.S. military eventually leaves Iraq, and when eventually, we do have a democracy in Iraq, because the Iraqi people will struggle, and eventually somehow, who knows when, develop a democracy. Our question is, what will be left of Iraq for them to represent? What will be left of Iraq that wouldn't have been sold off to multinational corporations or destroyed or partitioned? It's a really important question for us to battle with, because it's in understanding that dynamic that we can then best answer the question, what are the alternatives to all occupation? And how do we organize against this occupation? And who do we build alliances with? It becomes a rather complex question. So as to, yes, what should we be demanding? Well, I think very clearly we need to be demanding that the troops, the U.S. troops, pull out immediately. Pull out immediately. And there's a lot of different reasons that we can give. There's the understanding that if we look at the dynamics of our troops, and I think it is critical that we continue to look at the dynamics of our troops, we see very clearly that our troops consist of low-income communities. Actually, the proportion of our troops that it primarily comprises is people from rural communities, basically people who do not have other economic opportunities, other educational opportunities, and those are the people who are being forced one way or another into the military. We see that the Pentagon is officially, I mean, I can't believe their blatancy, they're officially targeting Latinos, going so far as to go into Mexico to bring Latinos into the military, going into Mexico to bring Latinos into the military. So then we need to be recognizing that when we speak about the troops. Who comprises the troops and who are they being killed for and who are they dying for? And clearly we have the poor being killed for the rich. I mean, I cannot come up with a clearer example than what we have here. So there's one avenue for why we're demanding the troops to come back. But there's the greater avenue if we want to look at it from an Iraqi perspective. The longer we have the U.S. troops in Iraq, the longer the U.S. troops are able to sow the seeds of potential civil war in Iraq. The longer they are there, the worse it is for the Iraqis, because they are contributing to the ethnic divisions in Iraq. They are contributing to the economic unemployment in Iraq. They are contributing to that anger. And unfortunately, what we know, based upon numerous historical examples, is when you do have resistance to an occupation, and when that resistance to an occupation is successful in removing that occupation, unfortunately, the transition for that resistance from a violent refusal of an occupation to a peaceful construct of a country is not very easy. And the longer that resistance continues, the harder it will be to have a peaceful transformation. This, by the way, in no way am I saying that I'm opposed to that resistance. I'm just pointing it out that historically it makes it very difficult. So the longer the troops are there in Iraq, the worse it is for Iraqis as well as for the troops themselves. You know, I'm not involving Bush here in my analyses, but just those two factors. And by the way, there's only one presidential candidate who has asked for the removal of the U.S. troops and who has come up with an alternative. Only one, and that's Denis Kucinich, and I think we need to recognize that in our organizing. Two, I think we need to be demanding very, very clearly and equivocally, with the same level that we say yes to the removal of the U.S. troops, we need to be saying equally loudly and consistently no to economic structural changes in Iraq, no to the economic occupation of Iraq, yes to the economic liberation of Iraq. That needs to be clear and loud. So when we say bring the troops home, we need to add that to bring Halliburton home, bring Bechtel home. Actually, let me clarify. I think Halliburton and Bechtel need not to be brought home. They need to be brought into Alcatraz, where they belong, because of their numerous crimes of fraud and corruption, not simply because I don't like them being a multinational corporation, but they've also really committed illegal activities. But we need to get them out of Iraq. We need to get that transformation done. And in doing that analysis, it forces us then as organizers to go, oh, just as with the troops, we have this issue of class and race, and we need to be organizing along class and race. Well, when we consider that the military is in Iraq for economic manipulation, then we need to be organizing with those who protest against the FTAA, because we see them linked. We need to be organizing against those who protest quite strongly against all kinds of economic globalization, because we have the anti-war movement is simply the other side of the coin of the anti-economic globalization movement. And the stronger we unite our movements, the stronger our message will be, because they sure as hell are united. So we need to become united. So that's another way that we need to be thinking about our analysis. Third, and again, these all go yes, all go in line, is yes to a real democracy in Iraq. A real democracy in Iraq. Yes to Iraqis electing their leadership. And in contrast to what the New York Times like to tell us and all these mainstream corporate press likes to tell us, whereas we, the Americans, that somehow accepted a judicial coup d'etat of our democracy and allowed George Bush to steal the election, not to say that Al Gore would have been any better, but at least he technically won. But we, the Americans who allowed this judicial coup d'etat, we are the ones who are going to teach the Iraqis this very ancient civilization about democracy. It doesn't work in my mind. So what we need to be calling is real democracy in Iraq, and we have suggestions. I mean, Ayatollah Sistani has come up with a very good idea, which is those food ration cards in Iraq, the food ration cards, they can serve as the foundation for voting registration cards. Very simple. We've already got that basic foundation. I'm not saying the transition is going to be smooth, but they're already really there. It's not going to resolve that much better. Now, it may not be the kind of democracy that they could ultimately have 30 years down the road, but it will definitely be better than the Iraqi Governing Council. It will definitely be better than the Iraqification of the U.S. military presence, which is what the U.S. is trying to do, bring Iraqi faces to the U.S. occupation. Superficially, if we're going to think about it specifically with regards to the military, there's this constant question that I'm asked everywhere I travel, which is, okay, we've got the troops out. What alternative are we going to be asking for Iraq? Are we simply saying, pull out the troops, come hell, come high water, what may? Now, there is a spectrum out there, and I'm not going to give you one answer because I think it's more important for us to be discussing the alternatives than it is for me, the so-called expert here, to be presenting you with one alternative and you to take it up and discussion to end. The spectrum is there are those in the anti-war movement who say that the troops need to be removed, there needs to be no other military presence, we will not exchange the brown helmet for the blue helmet representing the United Nations, and if there will be a civil war in Iraq, well, there was a civil war in the United States, and we went through it, let them go through it, and they'll figure it out. And they don't mean this lightly, they mean it fully, with full context. There is that avenue, and they do have, you know, it is worth discussing. That is one perspective. There is the other perspective that says there needs to be some kind of a presence in Iraq, because there needs to be some kind of a presence to ensure that the security status does not get elevated. In the sense, right now, the insecurity, the level of insecurity is the number one complaint of Iraqis. If there's just a complete pullout, there could be a civil war. Civil wars can start easily. They don't end easily. So therefore, there needs to be something. What should that thing be? Should it be a United Nations body where we have the UN Security Council basically ruled by former imperialist colonies? Should we have, you know, the British decide, the French decide, and they all have blood on their hands? Or should maybe they're the best option? Should we have a UN General Assembly go in with a different kind of a construct? Well, what if the Turkish are present there? How will that affect the situation? Should we have the Arab League go in, and how will that look? These are all issues, all questions. Each has its pros and cons, and there is no easy answer to any of these. But it ultimately goes back to a very difficult situation. But I think one thing that we can all agree on is, so long as the troops are there, the situation, our troops are there, the situation will continue to escalate. Economically, we as American citizens, as American residents, not simply we as representatives of the U.S. government, so to speak, we owe Iraq reparations. This is not aid. And I need to stress, this is not aid. This is reparations. Not only for our silent support of Saddam Hussein, us being the U.S. people, but more importantly for the 13 years of sanctions and for the consistent bombing of their country from 1990 on. We also owe Iraq, legally speaking, we have to clean up the depleted uranium that we have infested primarily southern Iraq with back from 1991 on. It's our legal responsibility. Legal responsibility. Third, when we look at the construction contracts that are taking place in Iraq, there needs to be transparency, there needs to be accountability. We need to make sure that there are no contracts given to companies that have tax shelters that are basically taking public money and stealing it from Americans. There needs to be Iraqi involvement, and there needs to be real reconstruction, not transformation. And again, these are our duties. And we do have the money. We as Americans definitely do have the money to put this in. So we need to be doing that. Now, in terms of, you know, some specific issues that I'm going to be calling for your support with, there are two bills in Congress that I think we need to be supporting. They may not be perfect bills, but if these fail, then the more progressive bills will definitely fail. They're never even going to get to Congress. If these pass, then we open the door for more progressive bills to get there. Currently, these are the most progressive bills in Congress, and they need our support. And they are Senate Bill 1813, Senate Bill 1813, which prohibits profiteering and fraud relating to military action, relief, and reconstruction efforts in Iraq. It currently is being supported and sponsored by Senators Leahy from Vermont, Feinstein from California, Durbin from Illinois, and Clinton from New York. You know it's mainstream when Clinton supports it, okay? So this is still, it's still pretty important of a bill for us to be demanding that our senators support, regardless how our senators voted on the $87 billion. That's in the Senate. In the House, House Resolution 3275, which is the Clean Contracting in Iraq Act. And again, this bill is primarily Representative Waxman's baby, Waxman from California, who has been one of the loudest people in the House demanding for accountability in the contracts. And this bill calls for transparency, competition in contracts, Iraqi involvement in the decision-making as well in the contracts themselves, and accountability. It's something that even a right-wing Republicans can support, if they want to support it on right-wing Republican ideology, which they seem to also have forgotten. So I would support Senate Bill 1813, House Resolution 3275. We definitely need to support those bills. On a larger perspective, and again, on a more fun perspective, United for Peace and Justice is doing a lot of work on Iraq. And one thing that we need your support from right now, because months go by really fast, is March 20th, is when there will be an international day of protest, when we will say once again, as we said in February 15 of this year, when we said the world says no to war, March 20th, the world will say no to occupation. And we need to be out there. I mean, our goal, unofficially, not as the UFPJ goal, but our dream goal is 1 million people. I think we can do it. We need to start organizing from now. So put March 20th down in your calendar date and, you know, start the organizing towards that. other demonstrations in which we will have Iraq feeder marches into are the July and August 2004 Democratic and Republican National Conventions. And those are so much fun to protest at. You know, something that, you know, just gets our juices going. So definitely put those down. You've got March 20th, July, and August as protest dates that we need to be in. Lastly, and more generally, I think when we ask the question alternative to occupation in Iraq, we need to also be posing that question domestically. What is it that we need to change in this country so that these wars stop and this imperialism stop? What is it about our economy that needs to change? What is it about our social movements that needs to change? What is it about our alliances that needs to change and needs to be developed? And I think it boils down to one question. When we say we, who is that we identify with? Really, is that we a nationalistic we? And if it is, then we includes Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush and Tom Lantos. Personally, that's not my company. I would prefer that the we be the we of social justice movements. And if the we is the we of social justice movements, then immediately that changes our alliances, and it forces us to have alliances across racial lines, across class lines, and across arbitrary national borders. And then we form a really strong anti-imperialist globalization front against the imperialist globalization front. And then we've got a winning fighting chance of actually really transforming this country and this world. So with that, I'm going to end with one of my favorite quotes that I just found recently in a Norman Solomon article, which is written on a wall in a South American city. Let's save pessimism for better times. Thank you.
That was Rania Masri, a Lebanese-American writer and activist. She's the director of the Southern Peace Research and Education Center at the Institute for Southern Studies in Durham, North Carolina. She's on the steering committee of the United for Peace with Justice Coalition and the coordinator of the Iraq Action Coalition. Her writings have been published in the following books: Iraq, A Liberated Country; Iraq, Its History, People, and Politics; The Struggle for Palestine; and Iraq Under Siege. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on Rania Masri and the proposed legislation on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete 45-minute talk by Rania Masri by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273.
My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.